calling the police.
Why? Why, look, it is really not a good idea for you to be here.
She's right. You're putting yourself in the spotlight.
I will not be cowed by a mob.
The people twist it. You know that.
Be deaf or killed.
This doesn't feel safe. Roy, as your lawyer, Herbert. I'm instructing you to go home.
Hey, I listen to Rumpo. Come on, and it's not just about you, Roy.
Very well. I shall leave.
At last.
Where have you hidden her, eh?
The talk of the street. The joke of the street. The talk of the street. The joke of the street. The talk of the street. The joke of the street. The talk of the street. The joke of the street.
Welcome to episode 298 of The Talk of the Street, an unofficial Coronation Street catch-up podcast that is disappointed that the show didn't give us the joy of seeing Harry bumping around that flat like a tornado in a VR mask this week. I'm Gavin.
Well, that would have been a sight to see, wouldn't it?
3D soft play.
Is it all soft play, 3D soft play?
I don't know.
I can't imagine two-dimensional soft play. If something is soft, it's by nature three-dimensional, isn't it? It must have shape to be soft.
Must it? Is it softness an attribute of its dimensions?
Yes.
I really don't care enough to argue. I mean, it's not like alto means stop or anything.
It's not that kind of podcast.
It isn't that kind of podcast.
No.
What kind of podcast is it?
It's a Coronation Street catch-up podcast. And we are your hosts.
We're sorry about that.
What is there to be sorry about? We're fantastic.
Oh, you and your American ways. 12 years and I'm still not comfortable with this.
You are especially fantastic.
I'm coming up for 6 years of doing this.
And especially soft.
Yes.
Mostly.
Sure. How are you this week?
I'm good. I'm good. Week two of the new job.
Action dog.
Yeah. It's really nice. I feel like we've gotten into a routine now because we commute to work together. Even though I start like an hour after you and finish an hour before you. And it's worked out quite well, I think.
Sorry.
Yeah, except for that one time I forgot you.
Yeah, apart from that one time when you were halfway home before you realised that you had to pick me up. Apart from that time,
it's been
working fine.
It was never halfway home. I was on the highway though.
You were a good 5 minutes travelling in the wrong direction if your intention was to pick me up.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, but otherwise, it's been nice. I drop you off. I go get a coffee at Dunkin' Donuts and sit in a booth and read my emails and stuff. And then after work, I go and walk the mall.
With the old people.
And young people. You'd be surprised.
Aren't young people typically in work?
You'd be surprised. I think there's college students who walk the mall.
Is there anything open in the mall?
Yes.
Lots of things.
Schuler Books is open. The gym is open. There's a gym in the mall that's open. And the go-kart place. And Penny's still exists somehow. JCPenney's. And the food court.
These are all money laundering fronts, right?
I get my tea from the tea place in the food court, which is awfully nice. And Hot Topic. Hot Topic still exists.
I only discovered that was a thing a couple of years ago.
You don't have Hot Topic in the United Kingdom.
I don't think so. This is great. They're just me and these goth girls in it. Like, this is fabulous. I think I might have bought you something in it.
Probably something Doctor Who related.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was quite impressed by the Hot Topic.
It's funny, Nick and I do most of his Christmas shopping in the Hot Topic. That's where he got your Spice Girls t-shirt.
Oh, yes. Lucky me.
You look fab in your Spice Girls t-shirt. Are you denying that you were a fan of the Spice Girls?
I'm more of a Girls Aloud kind of guy.
Hmm.
I think the Spice Girls were probably more important in terms of a musical legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And we're big here.
And the movies. Don't forget the movies.
The movies are pretty good.
Yeah.
Or the movie.
Wasn't there two?
No, I think it was just one. Spice World that inexplicably had Richard D. Grant in it. And Meatloaf. But I think Girls
Only
Aloud...
Only one of them is still alive.
I think Girls Aloud had better songs.
Hmm. They didn't make it over here, though.
And they, which I've learned from watching Celebrity Big Brother this week, according to Louis Walsh, they didn't really make it outside of the UK. They weren't like big in Europe either.
Yeah.
And they were really good.
Strange.
Stelly loves them.
Yeah. But you and Stelly have very similar tastes in music somehow. Like bands from Idaho.
We are going through a phase of listening to bands that get less than 1,000 downloads a month, mostly from Boise, Idaho.
Is that where Big Girls Blast is from?
No, they're Glaswegian, clearly. But I'm a big fan of Big Girls Blouse as well.
So am I. I do like a bit of Big Aren't Girls you? Blouse. Yes. I enjoy it when you play it in the car. They're good. People should look them up.
They're bands that are so small that they respond to you when you say something nice about them on social media.
We don't even do that anymore.
Our thinking is, if we want to go and see these people, if we want to go to live concerts,
mm-hmm.
you don't hold out for your favourite bands, because your favourite bands are going to be hundreds of dollars.
Right.
What you do instead is you start liking small bands who sound like the big bands that you like.
Right, yeah.
And that's what we've been doing.
Right. It's
And that's landed us on the likes of Big Girls Blouse, Wilderness.
Yeah, unfortunately they don't tour here though.
Big Girls Blouse don't. Wilderness will.
Will they?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we'll have to go see them.
And we'll have to go see them, which will save me having to spend hundreds of dollars seeing Metric.
Right,
because they're Denver Metric, basically.
Right, yeah. It's like, you know, the difference between going to see Green Day back in the day in the very early 90s when they would play Lupo's Heartbreak Hotel in Providence, Rhode Island, and trying to see them now for more than it costs to run Lupo's Heartbreak Hotel.
And the thing is, they were better when you saw them years ago.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
And not just because they were younger. Because they were
kind of
fresher and you know, and you were younger and the whole vibe was different.
More full of pith and vinegar.
Yes, I miss Lupo's. So, yeah. Yeah. Go look up Wilderness and Big Girls Blouse and bands. Just Google bands from Boise, Idaho. You will not be disappointed.
Garage rock bands fronted by female singers, particularly.
Yes.
That's what we're focusing on.
That is.
All right. Shall we preamble, my dear?
Yes, please.
Give us some of that potato, Corey News. Thank you, Idaho.
Yes. We love your potatoes. Once again, Corey did not receive a single nomination at the BAFTAs this year.
Wow.
Completely shut out 2 years in a row. I thought you had music
I have
for
no
that.
Music, I have no music for Coronation Street's failure to be nominated at
no
the BAFTAs.
No sad trombone?
Hold on. I have that. It's been a minute.
It's called Stellion to play that. Ah, so take that information as you will.
That was not the that I was expecting.
There you go. Bette Lynch actor Julie Goodyear's husband has given an update on her health after her dementia diagnosis last year. This was part of a project that they are involved in to help dementia patients in the UK. A video was put out that was narrated by Colin Firth that they were involved in, and apparently the makeup and leopard print have been put away and she is having trouble recognizing friends and family. We wish her all the best.
So sad.
Yeah, that she's just not interested in makeup and everything, and it was always a big part of her personality and, and stuff. So,
yeah, those things like the leopard print were almost like extensions of, they're extensions of Bette Lynch, the character, but also of Julie, the actor.
Yes.
And yeah, it's just really sad to think that this is the stage that she's at. It's inevitable, I guess, but yeah, still, it's just really, really sad.
It's an insidious disease.
Yeah, an absolute legend.
Yes, absolutely. And finally, our thoughts are with Tina O'Brien, our Sarah, as she was attacked trying to break up a fight.
What?
Outside of her house last Friday, and will be taking some time off from the show to recuperate.
Oh my God.
Apparently, two teenage girls were physically fighting one another right outside of her house. And she went out to try to break up the fight, and in the process became part of the fight, was attacked by at least one of the girls and another one. And
do you know, when you think about the things that are likely to break up a fight, seeing somebody from Coronation Street appear, you think would kind of take the heat
right,
out of the situation.
Right, for her to just
it?
Randomly show up. Unless you're aware that the that it's her house that you're fighting in front
of. That makes me wonder if it was deliberate in an attempt to draw her out.
Yeah, apparently some of her neighbors think that may be the case. So there's speculation. The police were called and are investigating as we speak. But apparently it has shaken her up so much that she's taken some time off.
Oh, how horrible.
Absolutely.
Best wishes to her.
Yes. And that's Corey News.
That's Corey News. And hot off the presses, Coulson came in third in Celebrity Big Brother.
I thought he was going to win.
I was sure he was going to win.
Yeah. Who won?
Somebody who I don't know. I think David something.
What is he in?
I don't know, but he has very white teeth and he wears shorts a lot.
Oh, so that's, an American then?
That's that's all the information I have. I have no idea what he's famous for. Or maybe I've listed the things that he's famous for.
Pretending to be American.
Maybe I've done that already. I don't know. Coulson came out of his shell towards the end. That's not true. He was himself all the way through it.
Right.
Somebody referred to him as being boring, and he took that very much to heart.
Yeah.
And that kind of knocked a bit of his confidence, I think.
Right.
But he's come out of this. Coming in third, I think, is no mean feat.
And in fairness, the person was asked who is the most boring person here and had a hard time answering the question, and also said, if you'd asked me 2 days, I don't think this is true now, but initially this would have been the answer that I would have given.
That said, when that guy came out, the inventor of Reggae Reggae Sauce, Levi Roots, when he came out in his interview, he doubled down on that and said that, yeah, Coulson really was the most boring.
What the hell is Reggae Reggae Sauce?
It's like a kind of spicy Jamaican HP sauce.
Like the curry HP sauce?
More Jamaican than that.
The tropical. The fruity.
No.
HP sauce.
It's quite spicy. It's quite hot.
Interesting.
Yeah. He's not, well, he is famous for making that, but he went on the Dragon's Den show. Our Shark Tank over here. And he had a wee song that he sang about the reggae reggae sauce when he went in to meet the dragons. And I think that's basically why
he's not a white guy, is he?
No.
Okay, thank God.
No. It does have 8 kids from 7 mothers, I think. So he's been a busy boy.
Hey, I've been married 3 times. It's fine.
Is 3 7?
No, but still.
Is 3 8?
No.
So
still.
Put your knickers back on, hen. No talking about you.
I know, but I'm coming to the defense of people who have to knock on a lot of doors, shall we say, before they find the right one.
Well, Levi Roots was halfway down the street. And now, all of this talk about a philandering sauce-making man brings us seamlessly onto the feedback section that I like to call Everyone's a Critic.
Christmas on Mars.
What a bag full of feedback we have this week. So I'm going to jump right into it. First of all, Debbie said on Spotify, yay for Auction Talk.
Spotify?
People love the Auction Talk.
We're on Spotify?
We've been on Spotify,
of course we're on Spotify
for years.
This is like the first time we've gotten a comment on Spotify,
though. I switched
though.
On the interaction thing.
Oh.
So, my bad. And Gail wrote in to say, I just wanted to share with you that last weekend, our son treated my husband to see his beloved Detroit Red Wings.
Aww.
We had a wonderful time in Detroit. Everyone we came into contact with were kind and welcoming. And I remember you guys sharing your story of visiting Little Caesars Arena for a Stevie Nicks concert. And Helen said how much she loved Detroit.
Yes. Yes. And my son and I have also been to a Detroit Red Wings game. Not that one, but...
Little Caesars Arena is a far better hockey arena.
Yeah, than a concert place. Arena. Yeah. I'm curious to find out where they had dinner. They had Mom's Spaghetti, which is Eminem's place down the street.
Gail, you'll need to let us know.
Yes.
Or just let Helen know. Where you eat is your own business.
No, but there's lots of lovely places in Detroit, so, especially that area.
Then Mark wrote in to say, one item for removal from Wendy's list of things that Corey's forgot that we forgot to mention last week. The show remembered that Craig had OCD when he said that someone had vandalised his locker with OCID Tinker. Keep up the otherwise great work. Thank you, Mark. So we can score it off the list.
When did that happen? Was that last week?
That happened last week when Swain was talking about Swain's World.
Yeah.
And
Party Time Excellent.
Exactly.
Yes.
That was in that scene. Ah. So we can score that one off the list.
Yeah, they're just going to forget again, though.
Yeah, it's... We're not rubbing it out. We're just putting a
right
in pencil.
They remembered it
through
for a joke,
mm-hmm.
But his personality is still completely changed.
Yeah, we're not deleting it.
No,
just a gentle.
We're putting an asterisk,
light line and pencil through,
and an asterisk.
Then Daisy wrote in, we play heads down, thumbs up in my class. You do indeed guess who has chosen you. I was wondering why it's called seven up. It's because seven people are stood up choosing people, apparently.
Hmm.
So. That answers that.
Yes.
Helen, congratulations on your new job. You deserve that window and nice people. You bring so much joy and passion and let's not forget to this podcast. So I'm glad you're having a nicer time outside of podcast life.
Oh, that is so lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Daisy. Nobody, I don't think, has seen anything nice about me. Well, that's fine. Ian Les Paul then writes, you probably have been constantly thinking it is about time I bought you guys another coffee. Last time, if you remember, was when Gav convinced me he was dying. That was when I had COVID.
Oh, that's right.
I agree.
Remember when you had COVID?
For the second time.
That was terrible.
I said to you, I'm going to my bed tonight and I don't think I'm going to get up tomorrow.
No, and you didn't get up for 3 days.
I agree, as I still enjoy the podcast, a regular part of my week. So here's the deal. I have entered a piece of agricultural equipment in the spring farm auction. Like most sellers, I have a figure in mind that I hope to achieve. We are talking thousands here. If I get my number, or thereabouts, you get a cranberry / coffee. If it exceeds all expectations, you might even get a hallmarked Georgian coffee pot.
Ooh.
Your coffee now depends on the vagaries of the Canadian used farm machinery market. Exciting, isn't it? So try to stay hydrated until April the 2nd. Which is auction day.
Very exciting. I'm excited.
Auction talk.
Okay, sure.
That's genuinely excited about this. Thank you, Ian. Thomas on Facebook says, Swain needs a meteor role and suggests that she hooks up with Adam, which I think would make her a really bad lesbian.
Yes, yes. Apologies, Adam is not up her street.
Andrew wrote in to say, loving the podcast, love listening when travelling. Keep them coming. The best Coronation Street podcast ever. Only discovered this podcast about a month ago, so thank you from Andrew in Scotland. We have a Scotland listener.
Woohoo! And his name is, do you think it's Andrew Scott? No, he's Irish. Never mind. Ignore me.
It might be. He might just be visiting Scotland.
Ooh, that would be cool.
Because I don't know. I don't know that many people in the UK listen to this.
You think it's just a bunch of Canadians?
I think it's mostly Canadians.
And French people.
And Americans who live close to the Canadian border.
And French people.
And, well, that may be Quebec.
No, because French Helen is from France. Yes? That's why we call her French Helen. Imagine if she wasn't living in France and we'd be calling her French Helen all this time and she's not really French. Would be horrifying.
What a faux pas that would be.
Seriously.
A little bit of French there.
Yes.
Then Noel writes, I'm back.
Woohoo!
Did you miss me?
Yes.
What the show forgot, my all-time favourite and most anticipated storyline, what happened to the budding child sociopath pyromaniac that was our beloved Hope Stape? What a glorious reign of terror she could have had. Maybe we could call a spin-off a story of murder, mystery and raging conflagrations. We could call it The Stape Tapes. Can we talk about Chesney, aka Mr. Gloomy Guts? Every time he delivers one of his signature woe is me lines, they should pay the wah, wah, wah. Actually, they should play the sound effect. Get my money out of that this week. Mm-hmm. Lastly, Tracy thinks that she's the talk of the street. We all know that it's you two.
Aww.
Later from Noel, the secret cave dweller.
AKA American.
Thank you to Noel, Andrew. Thank you to Thomas. Thank you to Ian, Les, Paul, Daisy, Mark, Gail and Debbie.
Whew.
Who all took time to write in this week. We very much appreciate it.
Yes, we
do. Feedback is always welcome. Send us your thoughts and I will probably read them out. Get us at thetalkofthestreet@gmail.com or our DMs are open at Corey Podcast. Please note we reserve the right to edit feedback, but only in the interests of brevity. And now we'll podcast for coffee. Thank you to Noel for our coffees this week.
Thank you, Noel.
A double dunter from Noel. Noel, you're already a friend of the podcast. You don't need to buy us coffees outside of that. But thank you very much.
Yes.
Anyway.
Delightful.
Noel writes, I was going to do this last week, but I've been so busy relocating to a new undisclosed location.
In America.
What was going to be a conciliatory cup of coffee is now a congratulatory one. Love you guys.
Aww.
Thank you so much, Noel. We always, always appreciate it. I'm drinking a Coke Zero Cherry Vanilla. You have your standard
cranberry juice.
The Talk of the Street is and will always be free on your podcast provider and on the YouTubes. If you think our show is worth anything more than the time it takes to listen to it, and if you want to show your appreciation, you can buy us next week's coffee by going to ko-fi.com. That's ko-fi.com/thetalkofthestreet. You can also sign up to be a friend of the podcast through the same link, where for as little as $2 a month, you can get a mention in the closing credits of each and every episode. And Noel, the kind soul that he is, has done both of those things.
Woohoo!
Remember, you can always support the podcast for free and get us in front of new listeners by liking, subscribing, rating and reviewing wherever you get your podcasts. And if you need a reason to go to ko-fi.com/thetalkofthestreet, I've started up my weekly blog again.
Fascinating.
I wrote one last week and it seemed to go down quite well. So I have every intention of continuing to do that for the foreseeable. So if you go to ko-fi.com/thetalkofthestreet, you can have a read of that. Shall we dive in, my dear?
Yes, please.
Let's start this week with, where on earth is Racist Kelly? Where is she, Helen?
You should do like Carmen Sandiego music for that.
I don't know what that is. Maybe you should do it.
You never played Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego on your computer with a floppy disk at school?
Nope.
When you weren't...
My computers did not have floppy disks when I was at school.
When you weren't playing the Oregon Trail?
The Oregon Trail?
You never played the Oregon Trail?
Are you saying Oregon or Oregon?
Oregon.
No, I never played. I never played either.
You never had dysentery?
I had that.
And had to.
I think I've got that just now.
And had to float your covered wagon over a river.
So glad you said covered wagon there. No, I didn't do those things.
Oh, you missed out.
On Monday, Roy is describing his bail conditions to Yasmin and Nina's roles and seems to be overheard by a bald man with a beard. It wasn't me.
It wasn't.
Yasmin and Abby are Team Roy, though, and Roy wants the best for Racist Kelly. He gets a call that the police want to speak to him again today about some text messages that they've come across. The baldy man is listening to this and gets scribbling. Meanwhile, Racist Kelly is on the front page of the Weather Gazette, along with a plea for information. The paper says that she turned her life around after being involved with a right-wing extremist group. And I'm like, Did she? Did she?
Did she? Did she really? You know what the show should do? They should hire us to make recordings of a fake podcast about, like a fake true crime podcast, and do an episode on Racist Kelly, who of course we would call Lauren, you know, for the show.
That's a deal breaker for me. I'm afraid she needs redemption story before I can call her by that name.
Wouldn't that be great, though? The show should totally do that. Show, give us a call. We'll make a fake podcast for you for money.
I think the time has, or the chance of that has been and gone.
I don't know. I think this is going to get stretched out. Yeah, like 3 months ago.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I don't know if we stretched that far.
Hmm.
I'm not sure that she turned her life around. But although,
I mean,
she got herself set up in a flat on her own.
Right.
She got herself a job. She got herself some education.
Right.
I guess from that point of view, she turned her life around.
Right.
But there's parts of her life that she very much has not.
No.
Turned around or put behind her.
Right. Or the show thinks that she has turned around, but did not deign to show it to us.
Max, who Shona and David think is hanging out with Bobby, goes to the prison to speak to Reese about Racist Kelly. Reese knew that she was missing, but he doesn't know where she is, and neither do any of his right-wing buddies. Reese is a big, fat waste of time and knows nothing about her whereabouts or the mysterious boyfriend. Max, unfortunately, explains that Roy is a suspect and then explains why and gives them far too much detail.
Yes.
Racist Kelly seemed to cut Reese out of her life, so this was always going to be a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
And just a stupid idea.
Yes.
Meanwhile, chat and Nina's roles between Alia, Nina and Bobby leads to the suggestion of a vigil, like Nina did for Seb. Nina's curious if this means that Alia is cool with Max, and Alia says, "We'll see."
Yes.
And I'm wondering if she's just tired of carrying hate around with her, or a grudge around with her.
I don't think it's necessarily hate or a grudge. It's just not forgetting, and which I think is a different animal, you know. And she's quite right, you know. She's probably will never forgive Lauren necessarily, but she is a missing girl, and she's not going to say, "Well, I'm glad she's missing," because she's not glad she's missing. One would think
it's more Alia's feelings towards Max,
right,
than Racist Kelly, I think.
Right. But initially they're like, "Oh, we're surprised that you're worried about her." And she's like, "It's a missing girl who may be dead. Of course I'm worried about her." Which I thought was good.
David also sees that Bobby's not with Max and starts to wonder where he is. And he discusses this with Shona in the pub. Later, Bobby and Max catch up and they fill each other in.
But not like that.
Nina is vigil organizing and leaves Roy in the cafe alone with two burly looking gents who lock the door, much to the annoyance of a passing Nick.
Mm-hmm.
The burly-looking gents are friends of Reese, and they want to know what the fuck Roy has done with Racist Kelly, and don't care how many times they have to give him a swirly down the toilet to find out, see?
They don't care how many plates they smash on the ground.
Or smudge.
Right, they just go, "Psh, tell us. I don't know anything. Psh."
How much salt they have to pour out of little salt pillars. Or how many raspberries I have to blow on Roy's tummy. Roy pleads his innocence as Carla and Nick burst in through the back, just as he's about to get his hair all ruffled up. But before anyone can make too much of this, or Nick can dry his tears about it, Roy realises, uh-oh, he's late for his second interview at the cop shop. So they rush off, leaving Shona in charge, and she's distracted as she speaks to Bobby about the guys who roughed up Roy, and they seem to know an awful lot about Roy's cleaning duties at Racist Kelly's flat. How could that have happened? Bobby is able to help on that one.
Sween.
So at the police station, Roy explains in an interview room about the friends of Reese who threatened him and has caused his delay. Swain takes statements from Roy and Carl and decides to reconvene tomorrow for Roy's interview. Back home, Shona gets ripped into Max for putting Roy in danger and for visiting Reese in prison. Max is so sorry. He wanted to make things better, but here he is just making things worse. He goes to apologise to Roy and Roy accepts, but asks that Nina be kept in the dark about the events of the day. He's worried about how this is going to affect her.
Yes, as he should be. And yet, he forgets.
Yeah. On Wednesday, 7 o'clock on the button, and Roy is taking Freddy for his morning shit. Roy has already done his.
Yes, because he can do his inside.
And he doesn't have to wait until it's exactly 7 o'clock.
Right.
Or maybe he does. When he gets back a couple of hours later, Carl is concerned that he went off a wandering on his own without letting anybody know. Meanwhile, Nina has discovered that internet sleuths have been digging up the bat roosts, which obviously causes Roy distress, and he and Nina go off to fix the site with shovels.
In public, right outside the Rovers, they both are putting shovels in the back of the Woody. Right in plain daylight. Right in plain daylight. Roy, I can understand. I'm very disappointed in Nina that she didn't think, oh, maybe this sends the wrong message to people walking by, us putting spades in the back of the car and driving off mysteriously.
And the fact that the bat roosts have been upset is proof that people know that Roy is a bat enthusiast.
Right, and goes up there.
So they muck up the site and they're probably just hanging about waiting for him to come up and do something weird, which he is absolutely going to oblige them with.
Right. Well, I mean, picking up garbage and turning leaves is not necessarily weird, but it does look bad.
It looks very bad.
Well, not the garbage, but the turning over leaves bit.
During this, Roy has to come clean to Nina about his running with the ruffians yesterday because she realises that there's something wrong and he's lying to her. Then on the street, Max is chatting with Bethany and then Daniel appears, which allows Max to wind Daniel up by calling him a fucking night creeper. And Daniel retaliates, well, I don't know about me, but I know you are, he says. And the pair of them are about to come to blows when Bethany intervenes with her chunky jewellery. Back home from tending to his beloved soprano pipistrelles and their roosting ground, Roy is immediately lifted by Swain while he's in possession of a shovel.
Yes. She's like, can I at least clean the mud off my boots first?
Some new evidence has come to light. Yes, that evidence is happening right in front of you, Detective Sergeant Swain. At the station, Swain has found a text from Racist Kelly's phone where Roy apologises for the unpleasantness.
That's what a soprano pipistrelle looks like.
I've already looked it up.
Aren't they cute?
They're textbook bats.
Yes.
When you think of a bat, that's what you're thinking of.
Yeah, they're a bit more reddish-brown than what I think of when I think of a bat.
They're furry wee things.
Yes, I think more black for bats.
Ah, see, when I think of black bats, I'm thinking of Scooby-Doo.
Right, and The Lost Weekend.
And now The Lost Weekend. Yeah, a good old reference to a 1946 movie. We know our demographic, Helen, and we play to it. So, he explains that the unpleasantness was him giving Racist Kelly her jotters. Swain doesn't understand why Roy cares when she was a thief. Swain just doesn't understand Roy.
No, she really doesn't.
Roy admits to being...
And neither does her silent partner, who still does not speak.
Roy admits to being Racist Kelly's friend, but that was it. Swain asks about Roy's movements this morning, wondering if he recognises how dodgy being found with a spade was. Apparently there are photos on social media of him digging up the site, thanks to those internet sleuths. Roy spends the next few minutes describing the roosting behaviour of the soprano pipistrelle, and Swain has no words, so just lets Roy go. I thought her face during that, or at the end of that, was just absolutely perfect.
It was so good. Just watching her face as Roy is explaining about the bugs and everything.
And he names the bugs.
Yes. Yes, he's very specific.
And then she's just, her eyes are glassed over.
She's got to realise that he is absolutely 100% not guilty at this point.
I think this is what does it. Yeah. He talks for like a minute about these bats and what they eat and why turning over the ground was so important.
Right.
And he's hopefully saved their food supply and, by extension, the pipistrelle itself. And
right.
And she's just, her jaw's slightly open.
Right.
A little bit of drool and just glassy eyes as to, what the fuck did I ask?
Right, yeah.
That's required this response.
And I mean, apparently the police had already gone over that area. So one would assume that she knows that there's nothing up there.
Yeah, she knows
there's
nobody up there. Yeah. Meanwhile, Daniel reveals to Bethany that he's been sacked from his job at the special unit.
Ha ha!
He says sacked. He really hasn't been sacked. He's just been suspended until the investigation's over, which makes absolute sense because he's looking after
young offenders.
And he is a youngish offender potentially himself. And he realises quickly that Max was the one that grassed him up. Meanwhile, Bethany is behaving really sketchily as they talk about this. Roy heads straight to racist Kelly's vigil after he gets out of the cop shop, where Max admits that he thinks racist Kelly might be dead. For a vigil for a racist teenager, it is remarkably well attended. Sadly, it's also attended by some of the same internet sleuths, and they badger and harass Roy, who somehow manages to dig himself into a deeper hole sans spade, but loudly announcing that racist Kelly was a beautiful girl and they had a wonderful connection. He's supported by his friends, but Dee Dee has already lost her shit at Roy today and drags him away before he says anything else incriminating.
Right.
Meanwhile, Daniel storms into number 8 to shout at Max. Max is fucking loving this and continues to wind Daniel up.
Right.
While David throws him out. Pick on someone your own size, says David.
Right. And what the fuck are you doing in my house, says David.
Max is a good 3 inches taller than David. Back at Nina's Rolls, Roy is encouraged by Evelyn to keep a low profile and to consider the impact this is having on Nina when someone throws a half brick through the cafe window. Swain and her buddy arrive.
It's Chesney.
Not again.
That's not your head, Chesney. That's a window.
Remember, Chesney, you always hit yourself in the face with the brick.
Not the window.
Tut, tut.
Tut.
Swain and her buddy arrive and promise to investigate, and she seems to be coming round to the fact that Roy is innocent here, which Carla notices.
Swain.
Later, Carla lays out on the line to Roy, explains how he's making this much more difficult for everyone and he needs to wind his fucking neck in. Daniel goes crying to Bethany again. He doesn't know why Max has it in for him. She reminds him of him throwing Max down the stairs, and maybe that's got something to do with it.
Yeah, good on you, Bethany, for once.
And again, Bethany looks dodgy as fuck when Daniel asks if she thinks Roy killed racist Kelly.
Does Daniel not forget that these people that he's slagging off are related to Bethany? Does he forget that, you know, Max is Bethany's cousin? Max is David's son. Bethany is Sarah's daughter. David and Beth and Sarah are brother and sister.
I'm just amazed at the quickness of your drawing of that family tree. Congratulations.
I guess, thank you.
A little scene at the vigil where the
Creepy Cropper. He's a pervert.
Yeah. By people who have no idea who he is and have no idea who Lauren is. I find it very interesting that, you know, that they point this out. They're like, these people have no idea who she is, did not know her in real life, and are just there to be kind of creepy themselves.
Yeah. They're there as internet sleuths.
Right.
To film things and to
edit things poorly.
Yeah, put a soundtrack on it for some reason.
And switch it to sepia.
Oh, you've got to have a bit of sepia when you're talking about a potential murderer, I think. I'm still a little shocked that the vigil was a thing, but anyway. On Friday, in the Gazette, racist Kelly's not only but also fans history has been revealed to the press. Evelyn tells a disinterested Roy. Meanwhile, Bobby finds Max in the salon to chat about the article. No one knows who tipped the Gazette off, and Max thinks it's going to ruin everything. Bobby reckons the prime suspect has to be Sabrina, makes no sense because no one has seen Sabrina roughly the same length as not seeing racist Kelly. In fact, I looked it up. Sabrina was last seen about a week before racist Kelly went missing. We haven't seen Sabrina in the longest time.
No, which is weird. So why which she, is why weird that she has been, you know, that she hasn't been seen for most of this when she was also Lauren's friend. It is weird. I find it interesting because Max also, when the right wing stuff came out in the papers, he was also disappointed and thought that that would cause people to lose sympathy and interest in Lauren's story. Mm-hmm. So, and yet that didn't seem to happen.
No,
I not, also, not at all. I also find it quite shocking that in the article about Lauren's OnlyFans, they use a picture, I'm assuming, from her OnlyFans, where it does not appear, where she does not appear to be wearing a shirt, at least, because she has very bare shoulders in that picture. And it's like,
now, with racist Kelly, it was her bare midriff from her crop tops, but she usually had something on her shoulders.
Right.
Especially if she was covering up bruises and stuff.
Right, yeah. But in the picture in the article, you know, it's cropped up to like here, but you can see that her shoulders are bare. It's like, be more professional than that, than copying and pasting an OnlyFans picture.
This is a newspaper that took a photograph of a woman peeing in a bush.
This is true. Or they published a picture that someone took with their iPhone of a woman peeing in a bush.
There's special places on the internet for photographs like that.
Yes, you think?
So they meet up with Sabrina in the precinct later and tell her about the leak to the press, and they kind of accuse her of being behind it. Sabrina insists that she didn't tell anyone and doesn't see why it matters anyway, and is a bit put out at the accusations, understandably so. Later in Nina's roles, Nina has news from Swain about yesterday's vandals who had no connections to the far-right group, because that storyline is done now.
Is it?
Sabrina comes round to see Max. But it's too late. And sorry, won't cut it this time. She's had enough of this. They need to cool it down. And she finishes with him. And that's about as far as we get with the storyline this week.
Yeah.
Does Sabrina know more than she's letting on here? Because it's interesting that you mention about Max being worried that things are going to ruin everything, or this is going to reduce, you know, he seems very concerned about the public perception of this, maybe rightfully so, but I'm wondering, does he know a little bit more than he's letting on? But now I'm really thinking that Sabrina's the one that knows more than she's letting on, because again, we haven't seen her for the longest time, so we kind of forget about her. But the way that she reacted, I'm not saying that she had no cause to react this way, but it was quite a severe reaction to this questioning. And then it had also a fairly extreme consequence where she dumps Max.
Let's not forget, this isn't the first time she's dumped Max. This is not that big of a deal. She dumps Max like every 2 weeks. Rightfully so, I should add. You know?
Here's the thing though, Helen. At this point in it, I expect to see some clues. And I expect that some of these things that are happening that we're kind of being dismissive of are going to come back and play an important role.
You also think Bethany looks dodgy, though. I think you
She looks dodgy as fuck.
You seem to be seeing devils behind every tree here.
The way that she's kind of doing that thing with her eyes and doing her best not to swallow when...
That's just how she looks.
When Daniel's questioning her. No, there's definitely something with Bethany.
I think she still feels guilty because she was poking the right-wing bear there a wee bit before Lauren went missing.
It happened a couple of times this week, but it particularly happened when Daniel said, "You don't think Roy could have done this, do you?" And she's dismissive of it, of course not, but the way that she looked, and the camera lingered on her for a reason, when she wasn't the main part of that conversation. Remember, this was really Daniel's scene more than it was her scene. She's just somebody that's sitting in her cumps watching the TV.
Yeah, as Daniel slags off her family.
I don't know.
Daniel was ridiculous.
I would like to think in this telling of this story that there would be some hints to who of the people that we know have something behind this. Do you think Rhesus Kelly's dead?
No.
I don't think so either. I don't think there's much chance of that. But which means that somebody's hiding her. And maybe that blood that was in the flat, although I think, was it confirmed to be hers?
Nope, they haven't confirmed either way.
Because I was thinking...
And I think maybe they've just forgotten to confirm.
That it's the boyfriend's. Or at least some of it's the boyfriend's. And maybe they've done in whoever this mystery boyfriend is. But again, I think for this to work properly, it has to be somebody that we know. It can't just be Phil with three L's.
Imagine if it was Phil with two L's, if he came back and he was a horrible person.
Well, he has an interest in Moira and true crime.
This is true. I'm surprised he's not out there taking pictures of Roy.
That would have been funny. Just pull him back in to be an asshole internet sleuth, which he clearly is.
Right, yeah, but he would be the one who'd be like, no, I've met Roy Cropper. It can't be Roy Cropper. He'd be like the one guy who has other theories and ends up being right if this was like a Hollywood blockbuster movie.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think it is an interesting idea that Sabrina might be hiding Rhesus Kelly because of something that's happened to her.
Right.
I would, there's a part of me that would wish that she would try to be helpful with the whole Roy situation. But also, we didn't see her, but Max was on the phone with her and she tried to convince Max and Bobby to tell the police about the OnlyFans. Remember?
Oh, she did. That was her idea.
Yeah, that was her idea. And I kind of feel like if that was the case, she wouldn't be hiding Rhesus Kelly.
That's a good point. Or maybe look at the OnlyFans, because in the OnlyFans, that's where the clues are.
Right. And as Swain pointed out to Max last week, when Max is like, I've got something to tell you.
Yeah.
She was on OnlyFans and she's like, duh, we already know this.
Yeah, they've already looked into that.
Public knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then this week when they were like, well, somebody had to have tipped the press about this, and everybody saying to them, why would somebody have had to have tipped the press about this? The press can find this sort of thing out on their own.
Yeah, a Google search.
Right, yeah.
And... you know, if she is making money off this, because I think the only people that ever look at Not Only But Also Fans were Weatherfield based. That seemed to be what the show was trying to push.
Hmm.
All the social media is very much limited just to Weatherfield.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a good point about the about Sabrina's action about that. If she is hiding Rhesus Kelly, there has to be a reason for it, and there has to be a reason that's preventing her from sharing this information with other people. But at the moment, I think that might be the best line, other than Bethany being dodgy as fuck. All right, let's move on to Tommy OMFG. On Monday, Tracy and Tommy O are still a thing. How's that?
Who knows?
She's worried that he's not himself and reckons that he could be making more money as an ambassador for Weathy County than he does as a decorator. A passing Steve speaks in Spanish to wind Tommy up, and then Nina rolls later. Shona tells Tommy that she doesn't know what attracted Tracy to a professional footballer, and this seems to give Tommy pause. Everyone knows about the Spanish gig at this point, apart from Tracy. In the pub, Tracy thinks Steve is pathetic when he ignores her when she comes in, and then he's back into the Spanish mode and takes great pleasure from telling her that Tommy O is fucking off to the Spanish second division to be a coach. Tracy, by the way, was in to get social media tips from Daisy now that she's dating a famous League Two footballer who likes porn star martinis.
Yikes.
Steve quickly apologises, but Tracy doesn't want to know. Instead, she's furious that everyone knew apart from her. However, she claims to have known about Spain and says she and Tommy were just a fling, and she hurriedly leaves. She tracks down Tommy to the bistro, gives him some red carnations, the national flower of España. Just a shame she couldn't deliver some yellow ones for his cowardice for not telling her.
Even though yellow carnations are a sign of friendship, not cowardice. It is white lilies that are a sign of cowardice.
We're trying to...
And also the death of Christ.
Cross too many floral metaphors here. So she didn't know about Spain after all.
Which is weird because as Tim points out, it's in the papers.
Yeah. Well, everybody knew.
Everybody knew on the street except for Tracy.
Yeah.
They weren't
relying on Steve telling anybody. They just knew from reading the paper.
Right.
He says it's just work, but she says that she doesn't care. It was just about the hole as far as she was concerned. Tommy looks, I don't know, is he relieved or disappointed? It was difficult to tell, as Tracy bids him adios.
Too much Botox.
Steve goes to the flower shop and tries to apologise, but Tracy is insistent that they are over.
O-V-E-R.
Over.
Yeah.
On Wednesday, Tommy's move to Spain is now official. Tim and Steve chat it over in Nina's Rolls with Tim. Tim and Steve chat it over in Nina's Rolls with Tim keen to establish that Steve won't take her back no matter what, and Steve is insistent as he puts his tongue in his cheek,
right,
and bites it a little bit, right, and says, no way, no how.
Right.
As if he has plans to start dating again. Tommy, meanwhile, has gone to the florist to see Tracy but gets Amy. Tracy's ghosting him and Amy explains why. He asks her to have a word on his behalf and she tells him to suck her balls. He's crushed Tracy like a particular flimsy roof did with Rana. Tim isn't impressed with Steve's dating profile and suggests that he gets a makeover from Sally, does something about his hair and trims the hair that's coming out of his ears.
And his nose.
And that is as far as we get with that this week.
Did he say that his hair was like windswept or tousled or something?
It's the opposite of windswept.
Yeah. It's kind of like...
It's combed.
Right. It's kind of like... Do you remember in the 90s there was that whole like Roman Caesar sort of haircut that was very popular with people like George Clooney? It's kind of like that, only with a receding hairline.
Steve's hair just...
And it doesn't move.
Confuses the hell out of me. Because I hate it when it gets it cut.
Right.
And I absolutely hate Steve's hair when he gets it cut. When it's too short and he's got his little widow's peak thing happening, he very much looks like Dracula. In fact, I think that's his handle on Instagram. I think he's Fat Dracula. I think that's what he calls himself.
Yeah, that's what he calls himself. Fat _ Dracula.
That's a great photo.
It is.
He's got a funny face.
He's a Muppet.
But when he grows it long and kind of spreads it out a little bit to cover the bits that are exposed by the peak, I think it looks fine. And at the moment, I think it looks fine.
Yeah. Like, there are times where it can look windswept. Like this picture of him when
he's outside and it's windy.
Like this picture of him with his kids camping in the wind and the rain.
Right.
Which is delightful.
He looks
but
so pissed off.
On the show, it's like they kind of comb it into like not a peak, but like a round. Like it's like a ball of hair at the front of his head.
I'm not sure.
And it's so weird looking.
I don't know what they anyway, do. Anyway, I wish that they wouldn't, because when he gets his hair cut, that's what it looks like for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I liked how Amy is the "you shall not pass" wall between Tommy and Tracy. I mean, as much as Amy might resent her mother for what she's done and how she's kind of daddy's girl quite a bit, she's still loyal to Tracy when it comes to the whole shenanigans amongst us.
But, I mean, this is not the first time that poor Amy has had to be in the middle of her parents.
Well, she's the adult out of the three of them.
She absolutely is the adult in the room, which is heartbreaking. You know, it's like when she was going through all the trauma with the rape and everything, and people are like, "Oh, Amy will be fine. She's so strong." it's like her parents haven't figured out that maybe she shouldn't be. And maybe they both need to grow up a little.
Yeah.
It's very sad. Poor Amy.
She handles it well, though.
Yeah.
Well, she handles it well until the time that she doesn't handle it.
Right.
And
which is fine.
Well, nobody wants to be around when that happens. Moving on. Our next storyline is Private Joseph. On Monday, Chesney is still on the couch. The official line is that it's his snoring. Joseph is excited about the open day to Oak Hill, but is worried that he might not be brainy enough. Gemma is unimpressed by the motto, which is in Latin, and fears that Joseph will be needing a horse for polo next. Linda thinks that he should
get dressed. Too bad Tiny's not around anymore.
Yeah. Tiny.
I was just thinking about Tiny the other day.
And his tendency to pee on people's feet.
Yes.
Linda thinks he should get dressed properly for this and suggests his wedding gear. And this gets Gemma even more hit up, but Chesney agrees. We don't get to see the open day, but Joseph had a great time. He just needs to beat the entrance exam, so he goes off to brush up on his Latin. But he doesn't look all that enthused. Later, he and Gemma get some time alone, and he admits that he wants to go to Oak Hill, but he's worried about Gemma and Chesney getting divorced. That's his real problem. Seems the ruse of Chesney's snoring hasn't pulled the wool over Joseph's eyes. He doesn't want to lose Gemma. Gemma explains this to Chesney later. Chesney thinks this is all his fault, and no one disagrees. Don't you give up on us, says Chesney, and he promises to do his best to make things right. Well, you ain't going to do that on the sofa, she says, and so she drags him upstairs for his hole. Chesney is forgiven. Probably.
Yes.
That's as far as we get with that.
And he seems quite keen as well. And that onesie is going to be very difficult to get off, though.
If Joseph...
Can you imagine?
Difficult but not impossible. If Joseph does get into Oak Hill...
Right.
He cannot, under any circumstances, tell Sally.
Oak Hill.
Don't tell Sally.
Sounds like she's saying oat kill.
It very much transforms from Oak Hill into either oat kill or Oak Hill by the third or the fourth example.
Yes.
Yeah.
She wants to kill someone so that she can put her kids in Oak Hill.
Sally is amazing in classic Corey at the moment as she's pushing this whole Oak Hill thing to send Rosie, who's just kind of good at maths.
Wasn't Rosie the dumb one?
Yes.
It's the other one who's smart, the lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who is currently getting ignored because Sally's focusing on Rosie.
Rosie, who is now a model in Japan?
Still a model in Japan.
A model in Japan.
She was only in it very briefly when we were doing this podcast.
Yes.
And I remember there was one storyline that was so infuriating. I think they went on a TV show, Rosie and Craig and somebody else went on a TV show on This Morning or something.
To talk about suicide?
No. And I refused to talk about it.
Because I thought the only thing she was...
No, it was something about... Wasn't Rosie involved in some kind of drug mule thing?
I can't remember.
I think there was something to do with drugs that eventually Tinker arrested the guy, even though he was in his infancy in the police force. Yeah. And I think they maybe went on to some show to talk about that. But it was so terrible that I just couldn't talk about it.
No, I just remember
her... And you enjoyed it.
I just remember her being involved with Johnny's son, the one that committed suicide.
Aiden.
Yes. That Rosie and Aiden were a thing. And it was Aiden's... Wasn't it Rosie who was involved with Aiden at some point?
A while back, but I would have thought that was before your time.
I think it was, but it was his death that kind of... that made her very sad and make her decide that she needed to move off the street and go to Japan to be a model. She was very involved in that Aiden storyline. I think some people blamed her for Aiden's death, didn't they? The breakup? It was kind of like Ariana Grande and that boyfriend of hers who died by suicide, and people were very cruel to Ariana Grande, especially since it was around the same time that she was involved in a terrorist attack. and people were piling on her because people are cruel and stupid on the internet?
Maybe. I can't remember.
That's all I remember. And well, the fact that she's Sally's daughter.
I'm sure somebody will.
But the lesbian was on longer. And it's funny that I can't remember her name. And
Sophie.
I remember Rosie's name. Sophie with the jean jacket.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was the name of one of our first episodes.
With Sophie's jacket.
Sophie's jean jacket.
Oh, good times. Good times.
Never listen to old episodes of this show. Just don't do it.
Right. At least we're never like politically incorrect or something. There are a lot of podcasts I listen to that I go back to listen to like their original episodes and they're terrible.
I think we're always painfully politically correct.
Yeah.
Remember the first episode where my microphone fell off?
Yes.
And we didn't notice until we'd finished recording.
We had lapel microphones when we first started.
Mm-hmm. And mine fell off.
And yours fell off and you didn't notice. And I didn't notice. And I was looking at you.
So I had to go through and boost my vocal that was coming through your lapel mic, which wasn't much. Oh, good times.
And we recorded in the dining room. Remember that?
I do.
The Mac was still in the dining room at that point.
This is us getting nostalgic. We'll be back to Corey in a second.
Yes.
The Mac was still in the dining room. There was a kid sleeping here.
Yeah. Yeah, and we were still doing like three other podcasts instead of just one. And we weren't even doing that podcast yet. We were still doing Common Language.
We were.
And no, Poetry in the Bar started during COVID, did it? And the Squarecast.
We weren't doing that at that point.
Which I thought was going to get like a long reboot. And you guys just did one episode.
Yeah, we finished the season three and then Stella was happy. So good enough.
Yeah.
I still have some Patreon episodes of that I should release at some point.
Yes, you should.
All right, let's move on to our next storyline, which is Bully for You. On Monday, Eileen, Sean and Dylan are dead keen not to tell Violet anything about Dylan's day in court or the reasons behind it. But Eileen guilts Sean into thinking about it again. And she continues to do so through the episode, nipping his head about it until Dylan announces that he's spoken to his mum, but she's in Tenerife. So that's that fucked. She can't get back.
Later, yes, because Tenerife is so far away.
Later, Sean contemplates calling Violet himself, but Dylan's quick to advise him, you know what, Dad, just let her calm down. She's pretty upset. So Sean doesn't need to be told twice. On Wednesday, it's time for Dylan to go to court for his plea hearing. The seat's still warm from Simon last week. Eileen is still upset that Violet hasn't made it in time. In that court, Dylan pleads guilty to possession of the zombie knife, and Sean, for some reason, is surprised by this. But he avoids a custodial sentence and is let off with community service. But when they get back home, Dylan and Sean shit themselves rotten when they see Violet sitting in Eileen's living room. What the fuck?
That was great.
Eileen has done snooping of her own and gotten in touch. Surprise, a fucking prize. Violet wasn't on holiday at all. And Violet is fucking furious about this. Reckons that Sean has fallen asleep at the wheel here. What Dylan did was wrong, but Sean is a parent, and she announces that she's taking Dylan back to that London. Dylan protests, but Violet has made up her mind. The number of people living at number 11 not helping matters, and Sean doesn't feel in a position to disagree, so it is black cab time. Dylan hugs Sean. Sean begs Violet not to do this, but she feels that she
has
to.
Don't take away my son!
And off they fuck.
Yeah, maybe if he had called her and been a responsible adult about this whole thing, maybe she'd have been less inclined to do that.
Eileen, maybe feeling a bit guilty for fucking everything up and getting Violet involved in the first place, tells Sean that he doesn't have to move out now.
Yes.
And that's as far as we get with that this week. Well, how little involvement has Violet had in Dylan's life since he moved back to Manchester? Isn't she in constant contact with either Sean or Dylan about him? Surely there should be some communication lines open.
Especially with teenagers, contact with the parent that they're not living with is flighty at best. But then when something happens that they very much don't want to talk about with that other parent, I would imagine it's even less. Sean has no excuse. And he's ridiculous in the, oh, I just don't want to worry her. But it's obvious that he doesn't want her to yell at him and make him feel bad.
There was plenty happening before the knife thing that Sean was, as far as he was concerned, Dylan was the injured party here.
Right, yeah, that he was Dylan being bullied by Mason.
Assaulted and was being bullied. And that's the time to tell Violet about
that. Right, because she told Sean about when he was being bullied in London, although the show seems to forget that that was even a thing, because Violet's like, nothing like this ever happened in London. And I'm like, you liar. Because well, that's the whole reason why he moved up here.
Is she talking about things like bullying, or is she talking about things like carrying a zombie knife about?
Well, yes, there is that. She's very snooty about Manchester, isn't she?
Well, she's been in that London for...
Oh, that London.
Checks notes, 16 years now.
London!
She's been out of the show since 2008.
When Dylan was born.
And she was in it for, I think, 4 years. I remember her vaguely. I think I was kind of dripping in and out of the show at that point. And I liked her. She was a barmaid in the Rovers. And it's quite funny seeing the comments online about her coming back. It's like, well, why did they get a different actor for the role? And they didn't. It's just
She's older
she's
now.
She's like 16 years older than she was the last time that you saw her.
It's weird, though, because you think 2008 and it's like, oh, that's not that long ago, but it's 16 years.
That's quite some time ago, right?
Yes, yes.
The thing that I was disappointed about it was that she came back with the intention immediately to leave. And did so that day. And that's Dylan out and that's her out.
Yeah, it seems weird, doesn't it?
That can't be.
And also, this trial thing, he pled guilty and it's all over?
Yeah, they sentenced him there and then.
Right.
There's no trial because he pled guilty.
Yeah, okay. No, that does make sense. It's funny that Sean's like, plead not guilty, plead not guilty, because that would have brought in a trial and would have dragged things out quite a bit.
Yeah, so because he was caught red-handed with a knife in his bag. And although there's some mitigating circumstances,
right? Yes,
I don't know that they're mitigating that much.
No.
That he would have probably got some time behind bars for that.
He probably would have
pled
gotten,
not guilty.
Yeah, he probably would have been worse off.
Yeah. So it's a Simon thing.
Yeah.
You have the plea, you plead guilty, you get some community service.
It's over.
That's it, done.
It's kind of boring.
Yeah, very much so. No news of Mason's.
No.
Because he got...
It kind of feels like we're going to do the whole ITV Quarry thing and have lots of stuff happen off screen, which is disappointing.
Because he was charged round about the same time and you would have thought would have been up in court round about the same time as well. It'd be interesting to see whether he pled guilty or not. And it's odd to have this storyline mentioned with not a hint towards Mason's activity over the week. Because I don't think we've seen the last of him. If we have, it's a terrible way to finish this storyline.
Right.
It's not...
Yeah,
there's been no conclusion to it, really, at all.
Weren't we supposed to meet Mason's parents at some
point?
I
thought we were. It was bound to happen.
Yeah, I thought it was mentioned in the press.
There's bound to be some clash between Gary and Mason's folks.
Right.
But who knows? Maybe that's still to come.
Right.
I really hope that we see Violet again.
Yes.
And I would imagine that she'd be back. I know Dylan's going to be back. I think they're just giving him a little break because the actors had so much to do in this story, and that's probably been quite draining. But yeah, I thought that thing with Eileen at the end of was just hilarious. You know, oops, sorry, I got involved in this. None of my business, really. I got involved in it. You've lost your son. Tell you what,
you can stay.
Unpack.
Yeah.
The spare room's yours.
Right.
And so, oh, cheers! Thanks for that.
But you knew Eileen was going to get involved because she's a mum.
She is. All right, moving on. Our next story is Rowan's spell. On Monday, Leanne is planning a romantic day off with Nick, so Simon promises to make himself scarce. Leanne is feeling more positive about the future after speaking with Rowan last week, and Simon says there's another session today if she wants to go along.
Simon says.
So back to the rape hotel they go. Leanne gets chatting to Rowan again ahead of another seminar session. Algorithms to produce output is Leanne's mantra afterwards. That doesn't mean anything.
No, it really doesn't.
Rowan hopes to see Leanne and Simon and Leanne again. And he gives her his card. She goes back and enthuses about the session to Nick and tells him that Rowan's advice has let her know how selfish she's been in their relationship. Nick was briefly uninterested, but is now fully behind Leanne going to more of these weird fucking things.
Right, yes.
Especially when she's taking the blame for everything.
Right.
And that's as far as we get with that this week.
Yeah.
He's a creepy man, as our Rowan, but he seems to have Leanne under his spell.
And he's got nice hair. Let's be honest.
It's good hair.
It's good hair.
What's the session? What's the seminar on? Did we ever find out?
I don't know. The power of positive thinking? Who knows?
I think Simon might have said something along those lines a week or two ago.
Right.
Because he's been going for longer. And you know what? Simon has been very cheery.
Yes.
Making the eggs and salmon and stuff and playing chess with Sam and everything. So it does seem to be having a positive effect on Simon. Yes. And it seems to be having a positive effect on Leanne.
Yeah.
Except we all know
that it's going to go downhill fast.
Yes. And you know, I think there might be some tears in Nick's future.
Aren't there always?
I think we said this last week that Leanne is probably quite susceptible to this sort of thing, given it's only still been a few years since she lost Oliver.
Right.
And I don't know that she really had much of a chance to deal with all that properly.
No, before the whole Harvey thing.
And trauma. Jacob when he was a baddie.
Right.
And then, and then the Sam thing, and then having to accept Sam into her life. God, remember that? When we were talking about that, Leanne just couldn't catch a break.
She really couldn't.
She was in the show non-stop every episode for what felt like years. Give that woman a holiday, we said. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's really been afforded to her that much. She's always been a kind of background character. She's never had a real sort of time off. But, yeah, and she's not about to get one because this looks like it's going to become a bigger tale.
Yes.
All right, then, let's move on to Tyrone's new dad. On Friday, Hope is begging Fizz for fancy new trainers, but Fizz isn't interested and tells Hope to pull her own money together, and then we don't hear very much more about that. I assume these trainers might become a thing later. Who knows?
Probably not. But it's funny because, you know, well, first of all, I guess they're like, they're special, non-invasive fake leather, and they're like $150, which Fizz freaks out at. $150 isn't that expensive for shoes, for brand new trainers.
For kid shoes, I would say that's very expensive.
I mean, when I buy them brand new, our kids' sneakers.
Hope's going to grow out of them in about 6 months.
Right. Yeah, even cheap sneakers are like $60. But it's funny because, like, afterwards, Tyrone, in his new beard.
Where did that come from?
That's what happens when you have surgery on your ACL. You can't shave.
It's a full beard.
It is.
And neck beard.
Yes. And it looks tidy. Good on him.
It's tidy.
It looks very nice. It makes him look his age instead of like a baby.
You think he looks like a baby?
With a clean chin? Yes. He looks like he's in his 20s.
I like him with it as well, but it took a little adjusting because...
You're like, whoa, wait a second. Who's this new character with a beard? And what have you done with Tyrone?
Exactly. The only reason I knew it was Tyrone was from his Castor cardigan that he was wearing.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was impressive. And you know what? Not a hint of grey in there.
No.
Those days are gone.
It's fine. But anyway, Tyrone's like, why can't they be interested in like the environment or something? And it's like, she very specifically said that they were environmentally friendly sneakers. That's why they're so expensive.
Meanwhile, Cassie seems to be taking the racist Kelly from another storyline news personally. And she tells Tyrone how it triggered her. Tyrone's kind of uncomfortable talking about it. There's some things that a son doesn't need to know about his mother, but he already knows that she was a sex worker round about the time of his birth.
Yes.
Cassie knows what it's like to be a sex worker, and later she has a pointless argument with Daisy in the corner shop about it. Then she has an argument with Evelyn about it, reckoning that Roy could be a client of Racist Kelly's, and shame on everyone for turning misfortune into gossip. Back home later, and Evelyn complains to Fizz and Ty about Cassie's outburst. Ty dances around this, and Fizz and Evelyn realise that he knows something and forces it out of him that Cassie might have had some sex work experience in the past. Evelyn is made of questions, but Ty doesn't want to share any more than it was just a brief time after he was born. Evelyn would rather have not known about any of this and fucks off to work. And there she sees Cassie and confesses that she knows about her history on the game. Cassie thinks Evelyn is loving this, but Evelyn is saddened and even more sad to know that Cassie's dad apparently knew all about it. It was that knowledge, says Cassie, that killed him. He accused her of shaming the family, but Evelyn says, look, it wasn't her fault. But wait a minute, the maths doesn't really add up here. And she thinks Tyrone's dad was one of her clients, and Cassie's silence confirms it.
Yikes.
But Tyrone must never find out. That's as far as we get with that.
Has he ever asked about his dad?
I would have thought that when they were having this conversation round about her past, and when she said, oh, it was after you were born.
Right.
I'm surprised that he never twigged at that point.
Well, it is Tyrone.
It is Tyrone, but
let's not forget his tattoo.
Because we all, there's Romania, there's a Romania flag on his calf. But it's obvious, it was obvious from the initial discussions round about this, that this was going to be the final part of the retcon of Tyrone's parentage, that the father was going to be one of the clients of Cassie, and so it's turned out. And in the fullness of time, I dare say we'll be introduced to him.
Yeah. But it doesn't seem like that's going to happen now, unless he gets on, 23andMe or Ancestry.com with his little DNA swab in his cheek.
And of course that can happen.
Yeah.
Or Cassie knows full well who it is.
Yeah. I find it far more interesting that she doesn't know who it is. That it's a client and she's not sure which one.
Yeah, well, and for now, that's all we'll get.
Yeah.
And then 6 months, she'll change her tune. And 2 years, there'll be somebody else making their breakfast at that table in that already overcrowded house.
And it'll be a dude. One would suspect.
We fill with two L's again.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
How can we get Phil with two L's in all of these storylines, please?
Right. How can we just get him back, please?
I thought Evelyn was fairly sweet.
Yeah.
Afterwards.
Right.
When she realised the timelines and when she realised what her husband knew about it.
Right.
She was very.
Yeah.
Concerned that Cassie wasn't blaming herself about it.
Right. And it was kind of confusing to me because I thought she already knew. I thought she was already aware.
I thought she either knew or assumed.
Right. Yeah. But I thought it was also very sweet the fact that Evelyn defends Daisy.
Yeah.
From Cassie.
I couldn't work out what the catalyst for that argument was.
Cassie thought that Daisy was blaming Racist Kelly's sex work.
But nothing that Daisy was saying really sounded like that to me.
Well, no, not to you, because you were fully aware of Daisy and her situation and that she would never say anything like that. But I can see where if somebody doesn't know Daisy and is not aware, although I can't imagine Cassie's not aware of the acid attack, for Pete's sake. It's kind of like Tracy and the whole Spain thing. But if you don't know, if you don't know the person, I can see where some of what she's saying can be misconstrued that way, because Daisy was like, you have to be really careful on the internet. And Cassie's like, well, it shouldn't be on a woman to be careful on the internet. We should be teaching men to be better humans. It shouldn't be, the onus shouldn't just be on women.
Yeah,
and fair enough, that is true.
Which is true, but a bit idealistic as well.
Right. It's true, but, if you're not aware that it's kind of the internet's fault that Daisy was involved in an acid attack, although it's not really, because that's not where that creepy guy met her. It was, although it was how he was able to keep tabs on her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Justin.
The one thing.
Please do not bring out your guitar.
I was going to reach for it, but it's over there.
Yes, it is.
Not by accident, I assume.
No.
The one thing that did strike me, though, about Evelyn was that she kind of reacted to Cassie's sex work with the shock of someone whose daughter wasn't a drug addict. I mean, if you're weighing those things up, is one worse than the other?
I think they're both terrible. But I think for Evelyn, it feels like, and this is actually, it should be the opposite, that the drugs were a choice, but the sex work was something that she was kind of forced to do by this dodgy boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas addiction is more a thing that you can't control. But for a 15-year-old, neither one of those things are things you can control.
Right.
She does seem very kind and very sympathetic about the whole thing, though. She's not...
She is.
She's not...
I think she is when she realized the age, and I think it was maybe before she knew the timeline properly that she was really having that kind of doubt about which one being worse. I don't know. Yeah. I think she was sweet in the end, and she was doing a decent mother thing.
Right.
By the end of it.
Yes.
And Tyrone must never find out. So next week, Tyrone finds out. Moving on, the next storyline, our penultimate storyline, Helen, is the heist of stupidity. On Friday.
This could be so many things.
Sarah is still looking at houses she thinks she can't afford. Damon encourages her to go and do some viewing and to aim for the sky, baby. He's also going to get a bouncy castle for Harry's birthday, and he's also bought Harry an Oculus, which would certainly see Harry wandering out of an open window before too long. Sarah's house viewing went well, though. It went too well. It's her dream house. Damon thinks he could put in an offer before too long, and he tells her not to give up on her dreams. She can achieve her goals. He's living proof. Later, he gets a call from Harvey's bum phone to let him know that the job is on for tomorrow. He's going to be robbing a van of money that's been taken away to be destroyed, so it's untraceable, see?
Right, it's also out of commission. The serial numbers have been wiped. So you can't really use it. It would, like, set off red flags immediately.
I think you could spend it in little stores. You couldn't spend a lot of it.
No.
Later in
You'd
the
bistro, have to spread it out quite a bit.
Yeah. Damon again confirms that they'll soon be in the money, but he needs to miss Harry's birthday, unfortunately. So he gets Harry a cake a day early to make up for it, which Harry basically throws his face into.
He does.
And that's as far as we get with others.
So cute.
Did you notice that Sarah shares a karaoke style with David? David, who's about to sing in the final storyline of the
week. Right.
And falsetto singing Mbop.
Yeah, because...
And Sarah also sings in a kind of falsetto when she's sitting with Damon. I thought it was quite funny. I wonder if that was deliberate.
I don't know. I mean, David is trying to impersonate prepubescent boys with his falsetto.
I don't think they sounded quite as high as that.
The youngest one did.
Mbop.
Mbop, bop, chawap, boop, bop, ba-doo-ba-da, bop, boom, bop.
That kept Paranoid Android off number one. What a piece of shit that is.
Hey, those kids played their own instruments.
I don't care. They play them badly. And they make bad music.
Aw.
Why does Sarah not ask questions about this windfall that Damon's expecting? Because she knows that he's a rogue.
Right,
She must know that it's coming from a rogue.
Because she really wants a house.
Does she want it that much?
Yes.
Fair enough. So we're looking forward to this heist happening on Monday, presumably.
And it's going to be so stupid. This is such a stupid idea.
That's why it's the heist of stupidity.
Yay.
It's the worst heist since that Scott guy tried to convince Johnny with his MS to be his getaway driver while he robbed the bistro. Remember that guy?
That was really dumb. That's the guy that he did do a heist with 40 years earlier.
Yep. While we're talking about old episodes, that was the episode that And my notes are hard. Everyone be cool. This is a robbery. Any of you fucking pricks move, I'm going to execute every motherfucking last one of you. And then hit the Deltone and the Deltones, Mr. Lou, which got the YouTube version demonetized thanks to a copyright claim. Good times. All right. Our final storyline tonight is Paul's happy day. On Wednesday, Paul's new personal assistant has started and is late. She's Hannah and she's a live wire, which means Billy doesn't like her.
Oh, he hates her.
So Paul sends him off to do the big shop just to get him out of the fucking way.
This is really disappointing to me because I really thought that that other guy was going to come back because he was involved with Moses? Todd.
What happened to Moses?
Moses lost his job and then moved away. Remember?
I do remember. To work for his cousin's car wash.
Right. Which is just
in that London.
Which is so depressing. But I thought he'd come back. This is why I don't think Dylan's coming back. Because London eats people.
Didn't eat Violet, though. She came back eventually.
Right. And now it's going to eat her.
Yeah.
Anyway, Livewire, Billy hates her. And we hate Billy for hating her.
She seems perfectly fine.
Right. She makes a faux pas because she's used to working with old people who can't hear her.
Right.
But she apologizes and explains that she's used to working with old people who can't hear her. And Paul accepts her apology. And Billy, who is not the patient, let's remember, does not. Because he's a dick.
Makes his fussing and fretting face as he watches and he clearly disapproves.
He makes everything about him and I hate it.
As Hannah's helping, though, she has a real bother understanding Paul as his speech is slurred a bit. When Billy gets back, he completely downplays it. And later, when Billy is reading to Paul, it's Paul who brings up his speech because his mouth feels weird, he says. And again, Billy pretends like there isn't an issue. When Summer comes in, Paul asks her, but Summer just stands there and ignores him and then eventually says that she doesn't know what he's talking about.
Right.
Privately, Summer chews Billy up for lying, and Billy reveals that he's terrified that this is the beginning of the end and Paul's voice is the last thing he has left. Summer promises to help Billy as much as she can. On Friday, Hannah's back. God knows why she came for a second day after the way Billy talked to her. But Billy lets her know about the speech thing and asks that it's handled carefully, and she comes to him for things that she doesn't understand. Summer, meanwhile, is dressed age-appropriately and doesn't think this is helping anything.
The fact that she's dressed appropriately?
No, the fact that Billy wants to micromanage this whole situation.
Right, yes.
Summer chats over her potential move to America University with Nina, who thinks Paul would want her to go. Summer doesn't know what to do. Back at the flat, Billy is running around like a blue-arsed flea, doing the stuff that Hannah should be doing before she gets a chance to do it. He snaps at Summer when she approaches him about this and tells her about Paul's end-of-life plans. And this is why Billy is hiding the speech thing. When Paul comes
because
back...
Because he's so distrusting of Paul...
Pretty much.
And Paul's, ability to make decisions for himself, that he's terrified that slurring his speech a little is going to set Paul so far off the deep end that he's like, well, that's it. Sayonara. I'm out of here. Which is so infuriating.
Especially when they've got an agreement.
Right. And they've
talked
about it.
And he has no reason to think that Paul's going to renege on that.
Right.
But he doesn't trust Paul, and he doesn't trust that Paul has agency in this.
Right. Yeah, and that's infuriating.
When Paul comes back and sees Summer upset, Billy tries to cover, but Summer is in no mood to lie anymore and approaches Paul about it, about his plans to end his life when the time comes. Paul thinks Billy told her just to stop her going to America, but Summer's mind is made up about that. She's going nowhere. And it seems that they're arguing, but the next we see it, they're in the Rovers for a karaoke night, which is apt as Billy has already sang like a canary. The two of them go up to sing Stand By Me. Oh, for fuck's sake, just show you're trying to break me here. And as they sing, Paul is obviously struggling, but he still does a decent job.
Yeah, and I thought he did fine.
And then Billy joins in, and it's just seeing the two of them sing the words to Stand By Me in each other's eyes was...
It's beautiful.
Paul asks to watch the video and is shocked to hear how he sounds. He thought he sounded good. Thankfully, Gemma's singing Don't You Want Me Baby, and that covers the whole I thought I sounded good thing for a bit.
Right, and it's also very confusing because that is an actual duet and Gemma is singing both parts.
Yes. Hilariously. Outside, Paul thinks Billy keeping him in the dark is cruel and stopping Summer from leaving for America is out of order. Billy admits that he selfishly wants Paul around for as long as possible. Paul wants Billy to stop making decisions for him, and he asks for some time alone at home with Gemma, not with Billy.
Yes.
So back home, he explains to Gemma how huge this deterioration is for him, being separate from conversations and fun, and he worries about not recording enough of his voice on his little recorder thing, and, you know, his last words said in his own voice are going to come from that thing. What if he left it too late? So he records a final message on the device and Billy and Summer return from the pub, mistakenly think that he's about to top himself and burst in. Paul quickly explains and everyone calms the fuck down. Privately, Billy worries that Paul will still go ahead with it without his assistance. He worries that it could happen during any otherwise normal day. It's all he can think about. Later, Paul orders Summer to fuck off to America and he promises not to kill himself while she's away. And Billy agrees that Summer goes for the best. So Summer agrees to go to the University of America that offered her a place. She refused it. They offered it again. She refused it again. Then she asked them to still take her and then didn't go and now wants to go. And they agreed. On Twitter, Kendall Roy Rogers reckons that it'll turn out to be an online course and she'll be off to use Salford Library's Wi-Fi, which I think is quite funny.
Yeah, that is hilarious. In that university that is supposedly in Boston Common.
Yes. And which a park.
Which is a large, flat piece of green grass in the middle of Boston.
Privately, he tells Billy that the signal for him to finish it all will be Oh Happy Day.
Which
was their wedding song.
Which they listen to all the time, and which is in their favourite movie.
And will be the day that he meets his maker, and it's unclear whether Billy approves of this irony. And that's how we end this week's episodes.
It was a terrible idea for Oh Happy Day to be the signal. It means they cannot listen to it ever again, and they cannot watch their wedding video, and they cannot watch their favourite movie.
But apart from that, a solid choice. Oh, very emotional.
Yeah, I liked the karaoke.
The karaoke was great. There's a little behind the scenes where I guess, was it Gemma that was filming it? Or maybe it was Paul that was filming it?
I don't know, but they were filming Jack P. Shepherd because he posted it on his Insta.
Yeah, and the camera that's filming it turned around and Gemma's pissing herself laughing at it.
Right.
Because it is pretty funny.
It is. I like that they know how to use David as a character.
They really do.
It's like the one thing the show gets right constantly, time and again.
Yeah, constantly gets it right
with
David.
And I think a lot of that is down to Jack P. Shepherd himself.
I think so too. I think even the instances where his behaviour is frustrating, it's still true to the character.
Yes.
And it's good that, you know, this is what happens when you have characters that are in a show for decades at a time.
Right.
The writers really enjoy writing for him.
Well,
and he,
sometimes.
And I think he enjoys putting little bits of himself into it as well. It really works.
Right, yeah. He's one of the few long-standing characters where that is true. I think there are a lot of long-standing characters that the show just does not know what to do with anymore.
Sure.
And so...
And it's strange that they do for David because he's done everything. He's one of those characters that's done everything.
He feels like the kind of actor that advocates for himself, whereas I don't think everybody does.
We haven't had Billy and Paul for a while. It was a little shocking to hear Paul's voice deteriorate like that.
And do you know what? I think Peter Ash is doing a very good job with that as well, because that could very easily that could very easily cross a line, and I think he does a great job of not crossing that line.
Yeah, it's very believable. Yeah. I assume that he's getting some coaching on this right. as well. But it's a fact that kind of comes and goes.
Yeah, and it's just enough.
And he doesn't really notice it himself, but just feels that his mouth's weird.
Right.
I think they're really explaining it well, yes. or having him explain what it feels like really well.
Yes.
Because there was a moment where he said something to Hannah, and I really had to struggle to understand what he was saying. But moments earlier, it was just, oh, there's a little slur there. It seems like he's maybe been drinking a little bit.
Right.
But they're getting him to do it very carefully and very precisely. And I think it's a proper way to do this story justice.
Yes.
And I'm glad that that's the way that we're doing it, because, as you said, this could quite easily be horrific to listen to if it wasn't handled properly.
Right. Could be very offensive, and it's not.
Absolutely. Like Billy talking about how selfish she is, wanting to hold on to Paul for as long as possible. I mean, I guess it's understandable, but it is falling into that really frustrating making it about himself
right
kind of thing.
Yeah, Billy's infuriating when he's not singing. How do you feel about Summer knowing about the euthanasia?
I'm glad that she knows.
Yeah.
But
a part of
she found out the same day that she decides to leave.
Right. Yeah.
And I think Summer's character, this would be the thing that
makes her stay. Yeah.
That she should have been leading up to that in two minds.
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing that makes her stay, and she can't be talked out of it.
Right.
But in a weird way, they've kind of done it the opposite. She was in two minds, and this is kind of the thing that's made her decide to go, because Paul says that he's going to hang around until she comes back. He doesn't have control over that. And when Billy says to him, was that just lip service, basically? And he's like, no, he's enjoying life and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, but she's going away for, what, 3 months?
Yeah.
And an awful lot can happen in 3 months.
They act very laissez-faire about transatlantic travel here as well. Like, oh, you're only half a day away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, is she though? Because it can take longer, and it can take longer to get a flight and to get through all of that stuff. And everything, and it may be when the time comes that she can't afford to be half a day away. If things start to go downhill very, very quickly and abruptly, which it can do.
She can be there in 48 hours.
Yeah, that's...
I think, best case, between 36 and 48 hours later. She can probably be there, but she's going to have to pay through the nose to do
that. Which is like 3 to 4 days.
No, that's one and a half to 2 days.
Oh, no, you're right. But still, and that may be too long,
mm-hmm.
All things considered.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is really surprising that this is the thing that makes her go. I did like Nina's whole, talk with Summer. I felt it was a little weird and intimate between the two of them, who aren't really friends. They're just friends of friends. She was more Asha's... Summer was more Asha's friend, and mm-hmm. Asha and Nina have broken up now.
Nice to see, though, a little conversation between Asha and Nina.
Right.
Kind of agreeing that they're not going to make this funny.
Right.
They're just going to be friends again. Remember, which is where they need to be.
Remember when they were going to make it a whole thing that Nina was going out of... was like having some sort of personality disorder over this whole thing, and then that didn't happen, thank God.
I kind of felt like we got a bit of our old Nina back this week.
Yes, but I thought, it was nice her talking about when her dad died and how she stopped everything and to take care of him, and how that made her dad sad, and feeling guilty and everything. I felt like Nina was the right person to deliver that message.
Yeah, I agree. So. Well, that was the week that was Coronation Street. Tell me, Helen, what was your moment of the week?
Stand By Me.
Yeah, I think it's got to be, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Just so sad, yeah, though.
We really don't know how much longer we have Paul to give it to. And Peter Ash is just doing such a great job.
I agree.
And Daniel Brocklebank can sing.
Yes, he can. That's out.
Moment of the week.
Moment of the week.
Your boring moment of the week. I don't think it was Daniel this week.
You don't think it was Daniel bitching to Bethany about her own family?
No, I'm loving this antagonistic relationship that Max is having with Daniel.
And
at the moment.
Whining and crying about being, you know, supposedly laid off, but he's not been laid off.
I'm loving that.
It's kind of weird because, you know, you kind of love this, but then you remember that at one point Max tried to drug Daniel with date rape drugs.
Yep.
And drugged Amy instead.
I am fickle.
But you know, no, I'm kind of in agreement because I hate Daniel so much. And it was funny when Bethany's like, well, you did push him down the stairs.
It's 2 weeks in a row we've had people giving it tight to Daniel, and I'm totally here for that.
Yeah. Is it Granny Linda insisting that poor Joseph wear a suit to this meeting instead of this perfectly acceptable hoodie that he's wearing?
Granny Linda's whole attitude to this is
clean,
yeah,
and looks nice. And she's like, and it looks like you took it out of the rubbish bin. I was like, people, if any of the kids in Oak Hill that he's going to be going to school with sees him roll up in this suit, he's never going to have a peaceful day at that school.
Yeah. Well done, Granny Linda. We loved you. And now your boring moment of the week. Yeah.
Boring moment of the
Chesney
week.
Has rubbed off on her.
Ugh.
Not like that.
What's your score out of 10 this week?
Oh, God, I haven't even given it much thought. It wasn't a bad week.
Another decent week.
It was a decent week.
A good week. Yeah. And that's a few in a row now.
I mean, I am infuriated by Roy just being so completely clueless about human behavior. I did laugh when Swain asked him if he had another phone and he mentioned his landline.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious.
And she's like, are you getting wide with me right now?
Right. And she's like, no. That's my other phone.
Yeah, your phone doesn't hold on to messages for any longer than 8 days or something.
Right.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yes. Because thank God he doesn't have his original smartphone with all the bells and whistles anymore.
Right. Anyway, your score?
7.
Yeah, 7.5 for me. A good week. I've enjoyed this this whodunit quite a bit.
And it is good.
And it shouldn't be.
Right, because we don't care about the character who may be dead.
But it is good. Yeah. And I'm going to be talking a little bit about why it's good. In my blog
it's
post.
Because
this week.
It's got a character we very much do care about, and it's Crosshairs. That's why.
That's right.
It's because it's Roy that they're trying to pin this on.
This episode was brought to you with thanks to our friends of the podcast, Daisy, French Helen, Pickles, DT, Trisha, Wendy, Noel, Canadian Helen, Christy and Shandy.
Thank you so much.
If you've ever thrown your face into a birthday cake, write in to tell us about it. We're thetalkofthestreet@gmail.com and we're at Quarry Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Threads and Blue Sky. You can shout me and Helen a coffee or become a friend of the podcast by heading to ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/thetalkofthestreet. Check out the clicky-clicky section of voggle.co.uk for links to our merch store and YouTube channel. And if you're so inclined, please leave a rating and a review on the iTunes or your podcast provider of choice. And be sure to check out our pop culture sister podcast, The List of Lists.
Please!
Thanks for making it to the end of another episode. And we will be back next week with more...
The Talk of the Street!
The Talk of the Street!
Bye!
Cheerio!